The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells,
about residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there,
and the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle, stories about life on the inside told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
So, what's on the political breakfast menu this week? I'm Dennis O'Hare. I'll be your host with opinions from the left and the right, some of the items on the buffet. Georgia lawmakers took aim, if you will, at a tax break for Delta Airlines after the carrier's decision to end a group discount program for members of the National Rifle Association. There's an exodus in Gwinnett County. Five Republican state lawmakers are abandoning their seats in one of the most diverse counties in Georgia. What could that mean for November's midterm elections? And as Atlanta United prepares to kick off its second season, we look at what the team's success says about a changing Atlanta. So, pull up a seat at the table. With me here today, once again, Republican strategist Brian Robinson and Democratic strategist Theron Johnson. Gentlemen, welcome.
It's good to be here, and I don't think I'm as tired as Brian is this morning.
Hey, crossover, we get the legislature, I think, gets the best of all of us. And we've had a little extra drama this time.
So let's get right to that drama. And a disclosure up front, Brian, it puts you in an interesting position. You're a paid consultant to the Casey Cagle campaign and a former deputy chief of staff for Governor Deal. And the governor and lieutenant governor weren't quite on the same page as both houses of the legislature passed a tax cut bill without a fuel tax break for Delta because it's ending a discount program for NRA members.
That's right. And as full disclosure, I am a paid consultant to Cagle for Georgia, the gubernatorial campaign for the lieutenant governor.
So let's talk about him as president of the Senate and killer of legislation.
Look. The caucus in the Senate, going beyond the lieutenant governor, the Republican caucus in the Senate had severe reservations about the airline jet fuel tax exemption that was in the bill that had passed the House. And in fact, the House members were calling the senators after Delta's tweet over the weekend saying, let us reconsider this. This is new information. This is changing how we need to address this. And then Monday morning, Speaker Ralston in the House, again, the House had already passed it, came out with very negative things to say about Delta's tweet. And at that juncture, the Senate had to take a very similar stand. They've been put in a box by Delta and by others. And look, this is the time of year where people have got to be very concerned about how people who are going to vote in a Republican or Democratic primary are going to react to the news of the day.
But let's take a breath here on all sides. This is a discount program, y'all. I mean, we heard heated rhetoric like Delta is trampling on Second Amendment rights and so forth. I mean, the right to a discount on an airfare. I mean, I know the framers all hated to fly full fare, but I don't recall that in the Constitution.
I think the constitutional issue is sort of looking down your nose at a group of Americans who have a certain view on the Second Amendment, that it gives us a right to bear arms and to go and buy assault weapons or any other type of weapon that you might want to hunt or to protect your family. That is what this is about. That's where the only constitutional issue is. No one's questioning Delta's First Amendment right to say what it said. No one should be questioning the state Senate's right to say what it said. They have a right to their perspective on this as well. But this is a bigger issue. And this is where I think Republicans are sort of fed up and say enough is enough. Because what you just said is how the mainstream media has approached this issue. But the mainstream media has a very different opinion when you're talking about a small business that denies service or gives a different kind of service based on their religious beliefs. All of a sudden, that is completely unacceptable. You know, and I have a problem with discriminating against people because of who they are, too. But Why is it different? I don't really understand that.
So what we just witnessed this week is a massive race to the right. Every person who's running for governor is trying to show the people of Georgia how conservative they are or how conservative they want to be. This was nothing but a political stunt on behalf of the Kasey Cagle campaign for governor. He knew that it was a prime opportunity to use the NRA and Delta, who, by the way, is the largest private employer in Georgia. And by the way, this is a organization that has not only supported Lieutenant Governor Kasey Cagle and many of the senators and the House members who are criticizing them for, as you pointed out, Dennis, just saying we're going to do away with a discount to NRA members. They didn't say the NRA members cannot fly with Delta. They didn't say that we're not going to allow anyone who thinks what happened in Parkland is right. They basically used their corporate rights to say that we are going to go down a path to really evaluate all of our corporate relationships and how they may affect their ability to do business. The problem here is that you have every single Republican now trying to show how their allegiance to the NRA is strong, how conservative they are, and the losers in all of this are the people in Georgia.
But Theron, let me turn that around for a second, because the two Democratic candidates for governor, Stacey Evans and Stacey Abrams, both jumped in and said, you know, we need to examine the hypocrisy thing here. And they were, in a sense, defending Delta, when many Democrats have had reservations about the fuel sales tax break for Delta to begin with.
Well, let's also clear up for our listeners, it's just not the Delta fuel tax. This is a fuel tax that would be for all of the airlines, okay? So this whole Republican notion of that this is the Delta fuel tax started when Richard Anderson, mm-hmm. and Brian remembers this, was the CEO of Delta.
Yeah, and I was in the room when they held the committee hearing.
And before
and
that,
Delta was in bankruptcy at the time.
And before that, it was just the fuel tax. But mm-hmm. when Richard Anderson said something that made a few Republicans angry, they went crying. They said, oh, you know what? We're not going to give this to them. We're going to prolong the process. And now we're going to label it as the Delta fuel tax. And so I think I can't speak on behalf of the two Stacys who are running for governor, because unlike Brian, I'm not, you know, consulting for them officially.
But nobody can afford him because they've spent all their money recklessly, as Democrats do.
But what I can say is, as Governor Deal pointed out in a very indirect but direct way, that this is a national embarrassment. At a time when we're still trying to attract Amazon. Yesterday we read in AJC that now it's coming down between us and possibly a Northern Virginia location.
Yeah.
And unless Kasey Cagle and Brian Robinson and Governor Deal know something that I don't know, unless there's something that they're not sharing, I just don't think that a Republican leader exercising political power to say that I'm going to block a vote that was already passed by great measure in the House chamber just because Delta exercised their fundamental right to say that we are going to discontinue a privilege that we give to NRA members. And then lastly, I have to say this. What's so upsetting to me, honestly, Dennis, is that Republicans in this state want us to believe that you cannot protect children, students, and American lives, but at the same time also protect Second Amendment gun rights. You can do both. But what they're doing is that they're bringing such a radical approach to this argument and saying, how dare you criticize the NRA? This is the bottom line. I want to say this on the record. The NRA is not solely responsible for these lives that were lost in Florida, but they definitely have a big role to play in it. You can be an NRA member. You can exercise your right, it's your Second Amendment. But do you truly support a mentally ill person being able to get easy access to an AR-15 and going into a school and killing innocent students? And I guarantee you that if you ask them that question, whether Kasey Cagle utilized the NRA issue to politicize this race or not, I guarantee they do not support the loss of American lives.
The legislature, Brian, did pass a measure, or is in the process of passing a measure, which would at least continue the listing of folks who have exhibited symptoms of mental illness and who might be dangerous. In other words, that list would continue to stay in federal hands. Lists compiled in Georgia would continue to stay in federal hands. And that's a bipartisan move in the legislature. But a cynic might say, look, in the end, when this dies down, either in this session or the next one, Delta's going to get that sales tax break back anyway.
That's certainly possible. And the governor hinted in his news conference on Wednesday that there were some changes that he was going to seek that were, quote unquote, non-negotiable. Now, we don't know exactly what that means, but some are speculating that he's going to look at administrative regulatory changes to the Department of Revenue that will provide some relief there at the airport. One thing that I want to make clear here is the move of the legislature maintains the status quo on the jet fuel tax that is at every airport in Georgia. And it was there before the Great Recession. It was taken away because Delta and other airlines were in dire straits and were heading into bankruptcy. They were out of money. This was done to help them. And then once the markets stabilized, the economy came roaring back. Now Delta is highly profitable, as are the other airlines, and that was removed 2 years ago. So it's not a clear cut and dried issue. And there were members of the legislature who had consternation about removing the sales tax on jet fuel even before all of this happened because they don't like industry carve-outs. Now, on the Delta side, I think Delta did an excellent job of putting out the case for the exemption. You know, Texas and Oklahoma and North Carolina are our biggest competitors for economic development projects. They have zero jet fuel tax. And Delta and other airlines could potentially add new international direct flights from Atlanta, which is huge for us. Hartsfield is our number one economic generator for the entire state. So the legislature is going to continue to try to make us competitive. We don't know yet how that's going to unfold, but no one is being punished by this law that is being passed.
A couple of other notes from the legislature. The transit bill, which we talked about extensively in our last visit, made it through two versions, one in the House, one in the Senate. It would create a regional transit authority called the ATL. And then there are all sorts of local votes that would have to happen to make it all come together. Theron, I'll start with you. This is really unprecedented for the Georgia legislature to do something like this, but it's a long way between concept and reality, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I've said on the show for many, many times that a lot of people are to be commended, starting with Speaker Ralston, who 2 years ago said that we've got to basically have a very interesting and robust conversation about mass transit. And to have Chairman Tanner's bill passed in the House and Chairman Brandon Beach passed in the Senate, it really gives now an opportunity for both of them to probably, both of these bills to go to conference committee to have a robust debate of how actually it's going to be allocated. There's still some questions, like my good friend up in Johns Creek, Mike Bacher, who's the mayor there, who's their council passed a resolution to really figure out how is this going to be a comprehensive transportation plan and how will you pay for it and how would it ultimately be equitable. And so this was a big, big step for our state and for our region. And also, I think that what remains to be seen is how do you make sure that MARTA, which is already an efficiently run system, how it can be expanded and make sure that it continues to operate in its full capacity.
And one interesting wrinkle here, Brian, was Cobb County has this kind of hybrid, you're in, but part of the county can opt out. It's still, obviously, there are some details to be worked out here in the legislative process. But is there any red flag here if one county gets to do this?
I think it's a green flag because we're moving forward. And this is huge progress from where we have been in years past. This really is and could be a huge change in direction for this region. And if there is anything that has changed it, it's the fact that people cannot get home or to work in a reasonable amount of time anymore. It is, and I think part of this because we have unemployment below 5% right now and the state's growing so fast, everybody's going to work and we have a severe congestion issue. And if there's anything outside of North Korea that is worse than the I-85 North going into Gwinnett or Georgia 400 North going into North Fulton and Forsyth County, I am yet to endure it by the grace of God. And I think people have just had enough. And I live inside the perimeter. And now my trips to downtown can take up to an hour, almost routinely. And so I am part of this changing culture, too. I am more than ever driving up to the Brookhaven MARTA station and commuting into downtown and just getting around Uber or walking from there.
So does this happen by sine die, the end of the session?
We're going to get something done on this. I mean,
okay, look, this isn't just planting the flag and waiting till next year.
No, because that's why it was so important that both the House and Senate did something before crossover day, which was yesterday, which is the time that if it doesn't pass one house, it can't get to the other.
Right. Meanwhile, speaking of how things are changing in the area, Theron, there are five now Gwinnett County Republican legislative seats that will be empty in November. They'll be up for grabs, open races, and this is because some Republicans are retiring. One of the prominent names, Education Committee Chair Brooks Coleman. Another reason, though, is that some of those folks are running for other offices. Are Democrats thinking they can flip all five of those seats?
Well, I think Democrats definitely see this as an opportunity because we've talked for now a few years about the change in demographics in the state, particularly in Gwinnett County.
Do they have enough candidates ready, though?
Well, therein lies the challenge. And so you've got to make sure you have candidates who are ready, make sure you have candidates who actually can raise the money to run a competitive race. The one thing that I think makes me a little less optimistic about us being able to quickly turn around is because while the demographics are there, we know that Gwinnett is one of the most diverse counties in the country, is that do we have a party structure in place in our state and also in our county to really get some people trained pretty
quickly?
And
that's been the problem for the state Democratic Party for years.
But what I am very optimistic about is that I think that a lot of these people in this particular, in this county, are paying attention to what's going on locally with their commission at a time because of the fast growth. The county commissioners have to look at raising taxes and doing some other things. We do know that there are Democratic voters there, and so I think what is going to need to happen is to have a massive voter registration effort, then recruit good candidates. And then I think it'll, you know, even if we don't pick up all of them, if we can pick up maybe one or two, maybe even three, I think that's a big win for us.
Brian, how worried are Republicans that this is just the beginning of a trend?
If they're tuned in, they should be very worried. Gwinnett is now majority-minority, which makes it ripe territory for Democratic takeovers. We had several incumbents in Gwinnett in the last election cycle win with razor-thin majorities.
And one of them is leaving.
One of them is leaving. And one of them is the county commission chair, who's an excellent county commission chair and has really been a responsible leader for Gwinnett. But won with 4 points against someone who had no money whatsoever. They just had a D behind their name, and that was enough to get them to 48%. So we're going to see more and more of that. You know, there's another House seat in Gwinnett represented by a Republican, Clay Cox. He had someone with a very foreign-sounding name running against him, well, with a D behind his name. But look, you can laugh, but I mean, we all know people are influenced by those sort of factors. But the race was razor thin too, and so it's going to be really hard to hold off well-funded, smartly run campaigns by Democrats in Gwinnett. What you're seeing Republicans do in response to that is you're seeing Republicans go to Korean American festivals and Vietnamese Chamber of Commerce meetings. There's a huge amount of Republican push in the Indian American community, which is huge in Gwinnett. So we are trying, but if we lose those demographics, we're lost.
In the process, will we see suburban and urban Republicans move even farther away from rural Republicans in Georgia? And that could be an interesting dynamic in the Republican caucus in the legislature.
There's already a big divide in how they approach those issues. And you can see it in the rural broadband issue that they're looking at in the General Assembly right now. Folks whose neighborhoods are fully wired with fiber optics already, and they've got a bevy of options as far as TV and internet service. In other parts of the state, it's very hard to get Wi-Fi or fiber optics cable out to your house. So, you know, you're looking at a case where, you know, who pays the taxes to expand that broadband? Now, that's huge rural-urban divide. Same with the hospitals situation. Is the rural areas that are struggling and the urban areas, the hospitals there are doing fine.
From one county to another, Theron, there was a bill that popped up suddenly which would have gotten rid of DeKalb County's CEO form of government. That bill ended up not going anywhere, but there were some interesting little endorsements that happened in the process as well. So do you expect that this bill, which was put together by a Brookhaven Republican representative, might come back as an amendment to another bill, even though the crossover deadline is over?
Yeah, I want to just basically say what CEO Michael Thurman said about this. He used two words. He said it was very strange and it was very counterproductive. At a time where this county, and let me be fully disclosed, I actually represent DeKalb County at the state legislature. And so at a time where this county for many years have been looked at as saying, hey, let's really do a full review of this form of government. Republicans have been talking about it for a while. It's come up now, at least in the last few years. But the thing about this, Dennis, was how it was done. It was Mayor Margaret Oliver and the AJC talked about how it was
Democratic representative from Decatur.
Decatur talked about how this was not done correctly. It was kind of quietly and sort of done in a very mischievous way. And then you also had one county commissioner, Nancy Jester, who actually showed up at the meeting to support this proposed new form of government, and while the other commissioners said they didn't know anything about it, and the DeKalb delegation wasn't properly briefed. And so what I think this is, Dennis, is that this is a political stunt, again, a race to the right to try to avoid some Republican challengers at a time where you have a CEO and is doing a really good job and you have a commission who is working together. And so I think what you're going to probably see out of this is the county continuing to watch this very closely. But there are going to probably be some calls for a full comprehensive charter review to not just look at the CEO's position, but to really look at the entire form of government in the county.
And Brian, those calls are nothing new. That's been going on for a while in DeKalb.
So let's box off here that Michael Thurman is a great CEO. Let's just take that out of the equation for now, because I think even Republican residents in DeKalb are very happy with his leadership. It's been effectively and competently managed. And I saw Michael Thurman at Mr. Johnson's birthday party last week.
Yes, happy 40th, Theron.
And I walked up to Michael Thurman. I said, because of you, my water bill is right. So thank you. You have my undying gratitude that the basic government services are now being accomplished in a way that's not catastrophically awful. But let's box that off. There has been a long-term problem with the CEO model. It's not very effective. It's the only county in the state out of 159 that has that model. I think there's a better way. I don't want a knee-jerk partisan answer, and I'm not saying that the bill going through is that. I don't really know the details of that bill, but I do like that Megan Hansen and other leaders are looking at thoughtful reforms, because
Megan Hansen is the GOP sponsor of the bill.
That's right, and represents the other part of Brookhaven, the one that I don't live in. But I think we do need to have thoughtful reforms, and I think Democrats need to be at the table and part of those talks.
Yeah, but herein lies the challenge, is when you start talking about reforming government, and you want to make sure that there's local control present, then leave it up to the voters of that county to decide how they want to be governed. And so this was nothing but a Republican way to try to show some constituents who are going to vote in a Republican primary to really try to pick on a county that is headed in the right direction. And so I'm not personally against wanting to have a conversation about a full comprehensive charter review. I think CEO Thurman, if he hasn't said it yet, he's going to say that very soon. But to try to usher it through the legislative process in a very deceptive way, therein lies the challenge.
Wrapping up another bill in the legislature, the idea of the state taking over Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport appears to be dead for this session. Theron, there will probably be study committees, though. Are we headed down a path where there will be some kind of either joint operation or some sort of thing other than the completely city-owned model that we have now?
As we close, another Republican attempt to try to force themselves on something that's being efficiently run very well. I think that this bill, this conversation about having an airport authority has come up every single year. The sponsor of this bill is a person who I think is not going to quit, and he's going to continue to want to expand this conversation. I do think, Dennis, to your point, we may see a study committee. There was a robust conversation about Clayton County in particular, mm-hmm. making sure that they feel like they are being appreciated.
Because the airport is in Clayton County.
Well, a portion of it is being run by the city of Atlanta and the mayor's office. And so I think, look, this was a Republican scare at the beginning of the session. It definitely got a lot of people's attention. Mayor Bottoms immediately went over and started meeting with some of her legislative delegation members, and also she met with all of the Republican leadership. So I think that her team of lobbyists and their internal team have got to pay very close attention to this as it continues to move forward.
Finally, and because we're approaching the weekend, Atlanta United begins its second season. I don't know whether either of you is a big soccer fan or not, but the size of the crowds that Atlanta United got in its premier season, combined with its success on the field in that first year, gives you an idea of the changing face of Atlanta. Previous efforts to bring soccer here failed. This has been howlingly successful so far. As you look at Atlanta United, what do you think is going to happen in terms of the continued patronage and the what this says about the changing face of this city?
I think they're going to have another blockbuster year. I have just been absolutely gobsmacked by the success of Atlanta United. And I guess this is why I'm not a billionaire like Arthur Blank. You know, when Arthur Blank bought this team and brought it here, I thought, God, this is going to be a disaster. I mean, the people who can afford to buy tickets aren't going to care about going to see soccer. They already spend $200 a game to go see the Falcons and $60 to go see the Braves.
But that's the point. The Atlanta Falcons fan base and the Atlanta United's fan base doesn't, at least so far, doesn't overlap that much. Now, it'd be even more successful if they did. Again,
well, they're already selling it out. You know, and they're already booking it out. You know, and when Arthur Blank's former partner Bernie Marcus opened the aquarium, I thought that would be a giant bust. He can hardly get in there; he's so busy. So, you know, it just shows you what a terrible market and analyst I am. But look, I have been taken aback by the enthusiasm for the Atlanta United, and what really opened my eyes was how on my street inside the perimeter in Atlanta, there were Atlanta United flags going up outside of homes before the season even started last year. So that answers your question, Dennis. I think that the appetite and the desire for the patronage of this sport is so high already. And we have the first generation of 40-year-olds in America who grew up playing soccer now, mm-hmm. people who are in their prime earning years. We've never had that situation before. So I think that's one of the things that has changed this. And then they are raising their kids to play soccer.
And that's it for this week's Political Breakfast. I'm Dennis O'Hare. We've been joined today by Democratic strategist Theron Johnson and Republican strategist Brian Robinson. Thank you both for stopping by again.
Thank you so much, Dennis.
Have a great weekend.
Thanks to producer Sam Whitehead. Now, if you like this show, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to rate us. That's a great way to make sure that other people can find us. We'll be back in your feed and in your head soon with more nourishing political conversation, and you have an open invitation to join us.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Local, state, national politics. WABE and NPR have the coverage you need. I'm Jim Burris, host of WABE's All Things Considered. Whether it's on the air at 90.1, streaming online, or connecting through our mobile app, WABE keeps you on top of election 2024 in what's sure to be a pivotal year in politics. And for candidates and ballot information, visit our election hub at wabe.org/election2024.